Okay, welcome everybody. Tonight's class called Oneg Shabbat Excellence, From Ordinary to Extraordinary Meals. We're going to learn about the meals of Shabbat. Okay, we're going to get into that. I want to start with a video. As I
have more.
Oh, right there. Oh, sorry.
Okay,
here we go. This is called a Deer's Diamonds video. I apologize for the screen, but
I'm a jewelry manufacturer.
Oh, yeah.
What I do today is because of Adir. Adir was my oldest son. Still, not him. He's a mini-me. He was born in New York, in Mount Sinai, 21 March of 2000. It was a good day. First son, we lived in New York from 96 to 2004. We moved back to Israel because we wanted to raise our kids in Israel. We wanted them to go to the army and have the life that we had.
The relationship with Adia, where I'm a surfer too, so we love to surf together. Not only in Israel, we went to Maldives and Sri Lanka.
October 6th was a Friday. We had the Friday dinner outside. And then Adia's friend came with a car. They took whatever they need to take, a tent, and this, and all the equipment, to go south. To the festival.
Exactly.
Yeah. There were seven of them, 728. Message to the family group. I love you all a lot. He sent a message to Iran. Sela is dead, Matan is dead. I don't think I'm going to go out of this. I love you a lot. That's the last one. That's it. And then I'm trying to send the messages. He's not answering. I'm moving to his girlfriend, to Yuli, and I'm on WhatsApp with her until 1 o'clock, until 10 to 1. We said, you know, Shiva, and 30 days and all that, and then we started to, okay, we have to go back to work, we have to continue being busy. And that time, everybody was in the army, all of them, and there's a lot of marriages inside the base. One of his friends, Adir's friend, Meir, sent me a video of a wedding in Junis, which was their base, with like 1,000 people, for all soldiers. And it was a wedding, and he was happy. I saw the video, and I'm sitting here, so I'm thinking, I said, you know what, though? I want to donate a ring. And he goes, well, you got nuts? Well, what's going on with you? Everything is okay? I'm going to feel good. So I said, I went to the Facebook, and I wrote down the message.
Oh, great.
Whoever the first soldier that is going for an after.
After is like 24 hours at home, and then you go back.
And we would like to propose, first of all, come over to the diamond exchange. I'll give you a ring with a diamond ring. Take it, and then go propose. 6 minutes after, I'm getting a phone call, and I said, okay. Meet me at my place at 5 o'clock. I'm going to manufacture a ring for you. The day after, someone else is calling, another soldier. So listen, I would like to propose. I saw your post. I said, listen, they gave me a ring. I said, wow, what am I going to do? I said, you know what? Well, okay, come over, take a ring. So he came and took a ring. Since then, it's today. This is the number 81. Since then, it's 81 already. And that's the, they get it like that, okay, with my logo and everything, and that's the ring. And they get it like in half a carat diamond, gold, white gold, yellow gold, whatever they prefer. And the best part is to get a hug from the soldiers. Best. The Hamas and the terrorists wanted to take our life. Taking an Israeli life, a Jewish life, is preventing to build a house in Israel. And what I'm doing is building houses in Israel. I'm doing the opposite. Yeah? I'm doing the opposite. But he's with us. He's with us. And we feel him. Every Friday we go to sit with Adir, so we sit there till the sunset, we say goodbye and we go to Shabbat dinner. Adir is not going to build a home in Israel, But because of him, a lot of people will. And this is my win. I win that way. That's my win. That's it.
How many more rings are you planning to make?
Just as many as I can. I'm not gonna stop.
Okay.
Most people have no.
All right. So pretty intense video.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. So so how did this guy Alon Misinka? How is he honoring his fallen son? What's his basic idea?
Making diamonds for military weddings.
No, creating more like
true
families and like so that people get married and have children and like Jewish population expands in Israel.
I mean, he's,
like
he,
more
he,
life so comes to Israel.
Yes.
So let's go back to the reason why Alon moved to Israel. He wanted to raise his kids in Israel.
Yes.
A lot of Catholic, a Jewish home built in Israel. So he mentioned his son will never be able to do that. So
idea.
By him giving these rings, he's like propagating right that ideal for he's like giving that ability to others.
Correct.
Even though, like,
he's not building the house. He's not marrying all these people. You know, he's facilitating, he's assisting, he's playing an important role. Like people, let's say some people will hold off getting engaged because they can't afford the ring. And you know, and he's actually
that's the reason why people would hold up getting books. You have to get something of value, I guess. Yeah.
Well, people are getting rings. You want to have a, you know, rings. Diamond rings are they tend to be expensive.
No, no, I know, but I'm just saying, like, you want to marry. You're like, look, I want to marry you, but I can't because I can't afford a ring. I mean, it's just like such like an upsetting reason.
Let's say they're going to get married without the ring. Let's say because they're both in the army, whatever, and there's an understanding. But it's definitely nicer if you're going to get engaged to present a ring. I think. In America, that is like the minimum expectation of a woman.
Yeah.
Korea, am I right about that?
Yeah, well,
can I ask the women of the thing? Is that what you say, the minimum level of expectation if you're going to get engaged? There should be a diamond ring?
I think he's taking his pain.
Yes, no?
Sure.
That's the way, that's what they call in Hebrew, in halachic language, there's lecharchila is optimal. The opposite of optimal is called bidyevet. Suboptimal. Right? This is called, I mean, just saying as people, you know what I'm saying,
a pruta.
But this engagement is not really a halakhic engagement. This is a gesture. This is what we call the conventional engagement, which is people give a diamond ring. It's been going on for 150 years. I'm not saying it.
I think it's two things. One is like he's taking his pain and turning it into something positive and fulfilling the mitzvah for people to start kind of a family and assisting with that. And then the other thing is whatever the negativity and anger that he feels against the terrorists and the Hamas, he's doing the opposite. So like it's kind of help facilitate that energy into doing something positive. That anger or that whatever that he feels, obviously.
Correct.
Because this one's life taken, so that's how I feel.
Correct. So how would most people deal with that situation? If you are alone and your son Adir, your oldest son had been was killed at the Nova Music Festival, a festival celebrating love, what would be your current state of affairs 210 days after that event?
Morning depression.
Yeah, basically, a walking. You could basically just simply internally give up. Yeah, you can go to work, but internally you're a broken person. And there are many broken people in Israel. But he has found an act of chesed, an act of tzedakah, an act of chizuk to, and that, by the way, is a very good strategy in general. If you feel depressed, this is a general depression move. If you feel down, it could be a clinical depression, but you feel down. One way to help yourself get into a better mood is to do acts of service to others. How so? So first of all, number one, since you're focusing on the other people, you're not absorbed your own self-absorbing thoughts. So that's already therapeutic move number one. Two, you're going to get positive feedback because you're helping somebody in a way that you can uniquely help them. So you're going to feel good about that. So you're not thinking about your own sorrows, and you're helping the other person, you will generally feel lifted by that experience. Even though the natural thing is that I feel depressed, I want to go into my hidey hole, curl up in the fetal position, and put the covers over my head. I mean, you're naturally, so this way you actually get out of that, and you actually take an active role. And that, by the way, he didn't intend to do that. He thought, I'm going to do one ring. One ring for a deer. And then the guy came to him. He couldn't say no. It's a beautiful story. Now, let us continue. We're going to get into the mitzvot of Kavod Shabbat and Oneg Shabbat. But the prophet who brings this is Yeshaya, Isaiah 58. This is actually part of the Haftorah we say on Yom Kippur. But I want to, this verse from someone who would like to read. Who's got a nice, good reading voice? Too intimidating. Who would like to read? All right, who if I call on, will you read?
Who can read?
Who is able to read the English language? Are you? Go ahead. Bavakasha.
All right, number six. So, is this not the fast I will choose? To undo the fetters of wickedness, to unite the band...
To untie.
Perseverance, and to let out the oppressed free, and all perseverance you shall eliminate.
Perverseness,
I can't.
You shall eliminate.
I'm still working on the reading.
Okay. Keep on going, we're with you.
It is not to share your bread with the hungry. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and moaning poor? You shall bring home, when you seek a naked one, you shall clothe him, and from your flesh you shall not hide. Number 8. Then your light shall break forth as the dawn, and your healing shall quickly sprout, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall gather you in.
Let's pause right there. So Yeshaya is saying to the Jewish people that the ideal fast is not simply just fasting, but a fasting that causes people to have a concern for those who are hungry, who don't have proper clothing, who are alone, who are being victimized. And it's a cause of a tshuva of helping those people in the community, in the society, who are weak and vulnerable.
Can I tell you something I started doing real quick?
Yes.
So people ask, do you have $1, $2? No, if you don't have cash. But they're like, could you buy me some food?
Yeah.
And I'll be like, yeah, well, you want an orange? Great. He said, I would just buy a Shake Shack. Just to buy people non-kosher food.
Sure, why not? Yes, you are.
If that's okay. I mean, I what I'm saying is not for me. It's for them.
Right, correct.
What I'm saying, so that's a thing like $5, $6, but it's like doing something real. Like someone needs a meal. That makes me feel good. But anyway.
Correct. And that's exactly this verse in Isaiah. Okay, so 9, and then Hashem will, if the Jewish people as a whole are going to do that, then you're having a redemptive experience. Your light will break free at dawn. Your healing will sprout. Your rights will go forth, and the glory of Hashem will gather you in. 9, keep on going.
Okay, number 9. Then you shall call, and the Lord shall answer. You shall cry, and he shall say, "Here I am."
What does that mean? What is Isaiah saying? That is the most amazing gift. What is Hashem promising through Isaiah if the Jewish people hit this level of concern of removing all injustice and corruption from their society? What is verse 9? Look very carefully. What is...
Like, God will answer you directly if you call his name? Or like if you remember him?
What do we call calling and crying out to him? We have one word for that in Hebrew.
Prayer.
Thank you. Because have you ever had the experience that you pray for something and you did not receive it?
Yes.
Has that happened? Yes. So he's saying that if the Jewish people are are at, who are operating on this level, he says, when you call, Hashem will say, I'll answer you, and will cry, and he'll say, here I am. Now, that's not because it's consequential, because the nation who was just is the nation that Hashem wants them to, whose interest he wants to, quote-unquote, support. But if you have a corrupt nation, do you want to, Hashem's not going to answer a nation who is to further their corrupt agenda. You know what I'm saying? So if you have a nation who is who has true values, who's really living a moral existence, then that nation, that community should be supported. So that's what he's saying. That means that nation will get a tefillah 100% response, because what they're asking for is proper. What they're asking for is good. You know what I'm saying? You're allowed to ask Hashem whatever you want. But Hashem, you can ask him and he will listen. We say something by davening, he is shomet tefillah. But he's not onetif. He's not necessarily going to respond to, the answer is not always yes. And the truth is, sometimes the answer is not always yes because it's not really good for you. We're not asking for the right things. Because if our values aren't correct, then what we're going to want for is really harmful to us. You know what I'm saying? So he's saying if the nation evolves to this level, then what we ask for as a nation we will get the blessing. Unfortunately, we ask for things that may not be proper. And the truth is, not getting that is the best thing. People have crazy fantasies of whatever they want to do or whatever it may be. In reality, if they had, that would be the ruin of their life. Mm-hmm. Most people in our society get what they want, what they call success in society, is the ruin of them. Look at it, just read the paper. Which identified to me a successful celebrity who is living a happy, good life.
Keanu Reeves.
Okay. I would say in many ways yes, but do you know his personal tragedies that he went through? You should read his terrible stuff. He lost so much in his life. His kids
Oh, really?
Died. Yeah,
he,
terrible.
He
suffered.
Life,
suffered.
Yeah.
Suffered.
And
suffered. You read it, so I don't want to go through the whole biography. It's just Wikipedia's there for you. Check it out. But he's a good person. But part of it is because he became what's real in life. When you lose, he got engaged to a woman and she died of a car accident. A lot of loss in his life.
Life humbled him.
Yeah. So therefore, it's not, you know, he became a very humble person. Even though he would not be because he's such a well-known and successful celebrity. So most people you see, then, you know, they hit success and then drugs, depression, terrible stuff. They're just because they're looking for something which is not cannot make them happy. They don't know that. Okay, that's why we go further. If you remove perverseness from your midst, put forth the finger and speak if you remove perverseness from your midst, putting forth the finger and speaking wickedness, and you draw your soul to the hungry, and afflicted soul you sate, then the light shall shine in the darkness, and your darkness will soon be noon. And the Lord shall will always lead you. He will satisfy your soul in drought and strengthen your bones. You'll be like a well-watered garment, like a spring of water whose water does not fall. And those coming from you shall build ancient ruins, foundations of gems you shall erect, and you shall be called the repairer of the breaches, restorer of the past dwellings. It's going to be a complete restoration of the Jewish people in the homeland. And this is really a description of a messianic era. Verse 13, pivot. If you restrain your foot, your travels, your business, because of the Sabbath, from Shabbat, from performing your affairs on my holy day, and you call the Shabbat a delight, oneg, the holy of the Lord, honored, and you honor it by not doing your wonted ways, your normal ways, by not pursuing your affairs and speaking words, then you shall delight with the Lord, and I'll cause you to ride on the high place of the land. I will give you to eat the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of Hashem has spoken. So, what is Hashem saying through Yeshaya that, on one hand he says, abandon a corruption, be concerned about the poor and the unfortunate, and you're going to have this thing. And then he tells them this whole Shabbos business. But say specifically Shabbos, honor it and call it a delight. And how do you do that? By not pursuing your affairs. Now, because as you may or may not learn, you may have learned with Rabbi Wilds, doing commerce, business on Shabbat, is that one of the 39 melachot?
No.
It is not. According to the Torah, you could open up, you could have your business open and sell merchandise all day long. You can do trades all day long. You did not violate one of the 39 melachos because moving money is rabbinic. Transactions on Shabbos, rabbinic. Making money, profiting on Shabbos is rabbinic. So he's saying that if you honor by, but that, because the, let's call it the spirit of the law is to make Shabbos a different day. But on the Torah, made the most, you know, they limited to the 39 acts of labor, where you transform, you know, with your creativity, something from a, you take a material, and then with your design, you transform it you transform it with your design. I have a blank sheet of paper, I write an essay. I have a raw steak, I have a grilled steak. I have yarn, I have a sweater. Okay? The major transformations, that level of craft, the Torah forbade. But things which don't make a change in the object, the Torah didn't forbid. So Yishai is saying, if you make Shabbos truly honored by really restraining your foot, in other words, not going to work and doing non-prohibited things, but making truly Shabbos a honored and delightful day, then Hashem will will reward you. So the question is, how do these two things go together? Why is the guy who is running after, let's take, there are two guys that Yeshua is trying to change. The guy who is ignoring or possibly persecuting the poor, and the guy who is going to work and making Shabbos a money-making day. Why is he putting those two people together? Why is he saying that's the same guy?
Wait, is it about, like, so you said something about the shop. So the shop can make a profit as long as I myself am not performing. Let's say if I...
I'm saying from the Torah. I'm saying on the Bib, on the Torah level. Rabbinically, these are all forbidden. You can't have your, you know... In fact, if you have a business open on Shabbos, you have to actually work out a contract where you have to have a non-Jewish partner, and that day has to be their day of business. It's a whole complicated thing. But Shabbos is not supposed to be a day of commerce or money-making. That's the most simple way of thinking. But that's really rabbinic, and that's from these verses here. But leaving the legal aspect, just going to a more broader motif here, how is a guy who is indifferent to the plight of the hungry and the poor in his community, the same guy who would not really be sensitive to Shabbos? Because Yishai is painting an archetype of a personality. Who is this guy? What is their life all about?
Themselves.
That's it. The center of this person's universe is themselves. Poor person? Not my problem. Shabbos? Not technically forbidden to make the money. Why should I lose a whole day of making money? He cannot see anything beyond themselves. That is the whole goal of Judaism, is to move a person beyond themselves. What is a person's national resting state? Is to be narcissistic, is to be self-centered, is to be selfish, to pull themselves out to see that you live in a community, in a society, in a world. And all the mitzvot are trying to draw a person out. You see the hungry, feed them. They don't clothe them. They have no place to stay, bring them in. Shabbos, it should be a day which is really you honor Hashem, not by ignoring him because you're making money.
But then, Rabbi, a lot of times people say, like, you become more religious and you're becoming that me, self-centered person, because then you're really, like, I mean, there has to be a good balance.
So, no, you're right. So, see, the thing is that our selfishness is very tricky. There's a thing called religious narcissism.
Yeah.
Let me explain that one. In other words, what we call the Yetzirah, the evil inclination, the instinctual part of ourselves, wants to maintain this identity and will be very internally very sneaky and utilize the Torah, but to satisfy that same those same desires, to be self-centered, to be the halakha. In other words, halakha Judaism, the 630 minutes cannot mandate perfection; it leads the way. You know what I'm saying? There's the letter of the law, and that's why the famously, I'm sure Rabbi Wiles may have mentioned, there's the thing called the menuval b'rishut haTorah, the person who is disgraceful within the letter of the law. For example, let's say you would go for dinner to a restaurant, and you order a steak. Beautiful. And then you order another steak. And then you eat like this. You just eat, and you're drinking, and you just till you, just basically just pure gluttony. But all the food, glatt kosher. The brachas were said on every morsel of food. So you didn't technically violate anything, but really, what Nachmani says, you violate Kedoshim too. You shall be holy. You worked out a way to be unholy through the mitzvah system. Or sexually. In other words, there wasn't, well, Sephardim, until the state of Israel, even through it, would have married many wives. Now, you know, part of a Jewish marriage is the laws of ritual purity, which basically means that the woman, when she has her menstrual cycle, there is no physical contact. So basically works out, and then after that process is over, she goes to the mikvah. So basically works out to be 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So therefore, there's a time where the couple is not engaged in sexuality for 2 weeks. So they're not totally absorbed in sex. But from the Torah, could you have more than one wife? Yes, you can. When the Sephardim came over from Yemen, a guy came in, there was wife one, wife two, wife three, and the rule was in Yemen, in Israel, is that polygamy is forbidden unless you married multiple, you know, like in outside countries where it was permitted. And it was, they still have polygamy in Yemen. In all Islamic countries, polygamy is, so the guy can work it out that basically he's having sex every single conceivable moment. So great, and this woman came back to the mikvah. Wonderful, welcome back. And this one, okay, and then they worked it all out that he's basically never having one moment where he's not have sexuality available to them 24/7, 7 days a week.
Having shifts.
Shifts, whatever, you work it out. So that's called the menuvah shesatara. That's not a holy person. The goal is to be holy. So you can work it out legally, and Jews are very good at working out the angle. And then, of course, you could be, a person could be religious, and then, here's another thing. If a person does a certain halachic practice, okay, there should be tzniut, modesty. You don't tell the other person. Don't tell the other person you davened this morning. Why are you telling them that? Oh, you want the satisfaction. Oh, you want to be known. Oh, you're Ms. Oh, very nice. That you basically undermine the perfection if you do that. Your spiritual life should be private. If you're telling people, it means you're promoting your brand. If you're promoting your brand, you're being selfish.
So if someone asks, then you're not supposed to say it?
Why? There has to be a reason.
If
let's say Rabbi is like, how many of you guys went to the service this morning, and then do you just not say it because
I'm not saying be lying to people. I'm just saying that people are like, you know, like who are like showboating and talking about. I'm giving you examples of your point that even if you become more observant, that could become hijacked to be more selfish. In other words, it's not. These are only instrumentalities to become more a developed person, but they can become hijacked and co-opted to become even more egotistical. Okay. It's another. It's called religious narcissism.
So refrain from talking about like this.
Because why do you need to tell? Oh, because I'm trying to use it as a way to. They should see that I'm a certain great person.
But in a certain context, it's okay. It's just
if there's a purpose for it, other than promoting yourself, non-promotional benefit for it, then you say. You want to encourage someone to say, "Bye, we had a great time at the Minyan. I was there with a bunch of other guys. We had a great experience."
No, but if you're the conversation starter, let's say like somebody is asking, then do I just refrain from responding because it can come off that way?
You can use your judgment. It's like, you know, give examples like people who went to Ivy League schools. Yeah. Tend to know that by the end of the conversation, you will tend to know that they went to an Ivy League school. Pretty much always you don't know that. Like, why are you telling me that? Nowadays, not so cool, but it used to be, you know, before, a couple months ago, it used to be worth something. Head of Panache, you know. Oh, I went to a little college in Boston.
Boston.
Right? Okay. Thanks. Okay, so, all right. Let's keep on going here. Yeah, no. That would be nothing more insulting than you went to Boston College.
Boston.
Pass for
Boston community.
All right. We continue on. Let's go on. Okay. All right, so the point is that... So a person who could be a chesed doer and a tzedakah giver and a person who's concerned about the well-being of others, specifically people who are downtrodden, is a person who can see a bigger picture and can really be able to do few Shabbos in a honorable and delightful manner. Okay, now we get to some of the halachos here. Rambam, Laws of Shabbos, chapter 30, page 2, the second page. There are four dimensions to observance of Shabbat, two originally from the Torah, two originally from the words of the sages, which were given exposition by the prophets. The two dimensions originating in the Torah are the commandments: remember the Shabbos day. That's in the Ten Commandments, in the first version. Zachor Yom HaShabbos, remember the Shabbos day. That's the mitzvah of remembering it by making a verbal declaration called Kiddush. We do that Friday night, and observe the Shabbos day. That's observing all the 39 Malachot. The two dimensions given exposition by the prophets are honor, which we call Kavod Shabbat, honor of Shabbos, and pleasure, Oneg. As Isaiah, which we just read, you shall call Shabbos a delight, sanctified unto God and honored. Okay, how do you do this? What is meant by honor? This refers to our sage's statement that it is a mitzvah for a person to wash his face, hands, and feet in hot water on Friday in honor of Shabbos. This is minimal. We call it called taking a shower. Okay? But back then, taking a shower was a massive, until indoor plumbing, minimalistically, face, hands, and feet. Ideally, nowadays, we call that taking a full shower. With all the various products. Okay. He should wrap himself in tzitzis and sit in proper respect, waiting to receive the Shabbos as one goes out to greet the king. So they would have the custom of, they didn't have Kabbalah Shabbat, this is pre-Kabbalah Shabbat, they would basically sit there before sunset, wrapped in a talus, and sitting, meditating, to receive Shabbos, leaving the workday week and thinking about Shabbat. This is a very high level. The sages of our former generation would gather the students together and wrap themselves in fine robes and say, come, let's go out and greet the Shabbos king. This is where the custom later develops of what we call Kabbalah Shabbat. What is meant by Shabbos delight? Oneg. This refers to the sage's statement that a person must prepare a particularly sumptuous dish and pleasantly flavored beverage on the Shabbos. All must be done within the context of a person's financial status. You don't go broke, within your economic status. Person is obligated to eat three meals on Shabbos, one in the evening, we call the Friday night dinner, one in the morning, the Shabbos morning meal, and one in the afternoon, that's what we call third meal, Shalosh Shilas. One should be extremely careful regarding these three meals, not to eat any less. Even a poor man who derives his livelihood from charity should eat three meals on Shabbat. Okay? So basically, owning Shabbos is basically taking the shower, dressing nicely to show what is the idea of showing the superiority of the day. Today is a significant day. For example, if the CEO of your company was going to come to your house for dinner, you'd make sure the place was clean. You'd be clean. You'd be dressed up appropriately. The same thing by Shabbos. You manifest the superiority of the day by your dress and the organization of the fact that your house is clean. Okay. So that's the way. It has nothing to do with if anybody's going to show up or not. In other words, if you should clean up your house, Kavod Shabbos, regardless if anybody's going to show up or not. Two. Oneg Shabbos is, at the very least, is having three meals. Three nice meals, which you call nice. Okay? And they should have a robust amount of bread. That's a lecha mishnah, at least two loaves of bread. It could be any kind of bread. It's not to be challah. And that's a basic idea of a basic idea. So I'm going to give you a couple scenarios.
Two loaves at every meal?
Yes. Ideally, even for the third meal. Those people, there are some people who are lenient on the third meal, but ideally, if you can do it, you do it on the third meal.
What qualifies as a loaf if you're...
Any whole bread, any whole baked bread. It could be a matzah, it could be a bagel, it could be a...
One of those, like, little rolls, yes, but it doesn't need to be, like...
No.
It has a little... Cereal bar?
No, it's not bread. It has to be bread. Real bread. Bread, which means it had flour, and it ferment, you know, and you have... It had... it leavened. Okay, could have any kind. It could be a pita, it could be a baguette, And it could be, you got the, you see where I'm going at. Okay. Steve and MGR works at an accounting firm. They are very respectful about him leaving early for Shabbat. He finds that whenever Shabbat starts at 4:10 or 8:30, he finds himself rushing. Why is that? Well, why is that?
Because he's working.
He's not playing.
But no, but has no. But he says no difference between he found himself running into Shabbos, whether Shabbos starts at 4:10, which is, you know, December 21st, the earliest Shabbos of the year, or June 21st, which is the latest Shabbos of the year. Shabbos starts sunsets at 8:30 in New York. He's still pulling in to third base there, you know, sliding, you know, getting another, you know, in the 18 minutes.
He's
why
not
is that?
A planner.
Is it a failure to plan and plan to fail?
Yeah. He's not a planner. Like, usually people that plan
well,
would probably be prepared. Oh, he's not prepared.
Maybe it's not important enough.
I would go even further. There's a part of us, you have to recognize, that we don't want Shabbos.
Mm. Oh.
Really?
Yeah. We love doing malacha because it's our agenda.
Okay.
We got our things to do list. Now I have to stop my own list of things to do, and I have to focus on a spiritual agenda. That doesn't seem as fun. I like my list better.
It's a habit.
It's an addiction.
Yeah, so like you have to break that cycle. Obviously, it's going
to
take
it's very hard habit. To do that.
Yeah, it's very hard to make enough.
You know what I'm saying? Because it takes, in other words, Rabbi Soloveitch had a very beautiful way of saying it. In America, we have many Shomrei Shabbos Jews.
Mm.
We have very few Erev Shabbos Jews. What's an Erev Shabbos Jew? We read it. No, Erev means the couple hours before. In other words, slowing down, calmly get everything ready, and gets into the Shabbos zone before, like an hour before, chilling, getting into a meditative spiritual state.
Oh, like as in just winding down.
Not just, you know, you ever see people like, you know, before Shabbos, you know, they're blow drying their hair, it's like somebody's like, you know, people are on speed running through the house, and then the candles are lit. Okay? You know what I'm talking about?
To drill in that too.
Okay, so that's an agenda. But there's a part of us that does it because at the last second, it's like getting your taxes on April 15th.
Yeah.
There's a guy pulling into the last post office in New York where you can get that February 15th stamp. That's all of us. It's very hard to do this. To be Shomer Shabbos is one level. To be an heir, that's next level stuff. Because you're showing it. Because if you're, let's change the scenario. If your boss was coming to your home, and there's a 6 p.m. dinner, you're not showing up to your house at 5:10 to get everything ready. No. First of all, you're writing it all out. There's the menu, it's planned. The table's set the night before. You know, the place is cleaned up the night. You know, nothing, you cannot messing around with that. And then you're also on it, you're already there 2 hours before, you're relaxed, you're ready, showtime at the Apollo, come on in, bavakasha, have a seat, would you like a drink, we have a selection here. Okay? That's what you're doing. Shabbos.
There's a part of you that probably tells yourself also that, well, this happens every week. Whereas if my boss is here, it's like, this is the once in a lifetime.
Correct.
I can make an exception.
Correct.
To home earlier.
Okay. As I'm saying, this is harder.
Yeah.
This is harder. But it has nothing to do, but people say, oh, Shabbos is in so early. But it's not true, because whether Shabbos is in at 4:10 or 8:30, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I got more time. Because a long Friday afternoon is my new Sunday. Hello, my new Sunday. Hey, you want to do a little 4 o'clock drinks? What are we doing? What are we doing? We got some time over here. Let's do it. Come on. Right? Don't you feel that? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I'm a remote worker. I don't understand that culture.
Okay. But still, that's even worse, because you're actually a bigger challenge.
Yeah.
Because the division between your own personal life and your personal space and work is about an inch thin.
Yeah.
And there's always that one email. And there's always that one thing to send over. Right? I had somebody, I had an MJ-er over working for American Express with my house for Shabbos. They're momish on the call, on a conference call, into 80 minutes, and then they just sort of like, boop, and they just sort of, the call kept on going, they sort of zipped it. They weren't so senior, they couldn't like, you know, they had, whatever. So my point being that she was working literally till the globe of the sun went below the line. You know, that was it. You know, okay. Scenario number two. Jane MGR wants to make her Shabbos meal have a Dvar Torah or Torah discussion. She feels that the people are resistant to having Torah invading the natural flow of the conversation. What advice would you give to Jane? You know what I'm talking about? Have you ever seen that situation like, I'm not feeling the Torah environment in this meal over here? Have you had that? Have you been to such a Friday night or a Shabbos day meal where a Dvar Torah would be viewed as a Torah invasion? Mm-hmm. An unwelcome Torah invasion?
Not with MJE, of course.
Not with MGE, because, okay, fine.
It was always very...
I don't know, and if someone says, do you want to say something, I just say my part, and whether they want to receive it or not, that's on them, but I've done my part.
Okay. No, so it's not so simple. So there's an art to this. I'm going to tell you, look, because if you know me a little bit, I tell you what I see the reality is in an unvarnished way. One of the areas where in the modern Orthodox community needs improvement for many people is that for many Jews who have been observant their whole life, they have lost any kind of intellectual interest in their Judaism. Judaism is part of the social clothing they wear to be part of the society, the community, but doesn't something that has real deep spiritual meaning. So therefore, their Shabbos conversation will be about
work.
NBA, baby, did you see that game last night? New York Knicks, choking at the last second. You know, we'll have these kind of conversations, and what are you, and where are you going for vacation, and what are you doing, and did you check out that new restaurant, and what's going on? You know, basically schmoozing the whole time. And therefore, Torah does not seem to find a way to stick into this conversation in any kind of way. So you can do, you know, the best way, by the way, is to obviously keep it short and say, I heard a very interesting Torah thought. Torah thought is very unintimidating. In other words, if I have a Dvar Torah, it's like...
Wait, actually...
Or you say the word, do you want to kill people? In this week's Parsha, you want to close out the party big time in this week's Parsha. Or the best kind of Dvar Torah I like is the best Dvar Torah in a table is Dvar Torah that happens organically as part of the conversation.
Yeah.
There's a conversation about a Torah subject. It was not like, it wasn't an official, I will now read the official Dvar Torah for the official Shabbos meal. No, that's a little lame. So is it a Torah conversation? Did you say, I have a Torah thought that I've been thinking about or I just heard? And you just sort of chill. And then not read anything. Don't read any text. Eye contact with the people. Engage the people. Look at them. Look
I
at them.
I also like when people say, like, does anyone have any closing thoughts?
Yes.
Closing what?
Closing thoughts. The one where we went for lunch.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked it.
Okay, so that's a good way to speak in.
Yeah.
Yes. Henry?
I've gone to a Shabbat meal a couple times where the leader makes remarks at the beginning.
Okay.
After the blessings, he'll say, listen, this is a little bit about the parsha for the week, and then goes into it.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's the strategy of get it out of the way early,
right.
So people, before everybody gets lost.
Right. Mm. That seems pretty effective.
One strategy that if I've had a little bit more of a hostile group, I have, you know, was just like, they're not in the mood. While I have made the motzi and I slice the challah up and everybody's quiet, I will throw out a Torah question. when they are in the they are in ransom by they are completely tied up. They're silent for 30 to 45 seconds. but that's not the ideal that you got to be doing that. But Torah thought, closing thought, I love it. Let's keep on going because we're already in the OT over here. All right. Scenario 3, Bob Evgier wants to have his Shabbos lunch reflect the ideal of Yeshayahu and incorporate chesed and justice into his meal. How would that inform who he invites for Shabbos guests? What do you guys say?
Wait, what?
Read scenario 3.
What would be anyone, right?
Nope, wouldn't be anyone.
Is this in reference to what we were reading earlier?
Yeah, Yeshayahu, Isaiah.
Someone who doesn't have a Shabbos meal.
Exactly!
Let's say it again.
Someone who doesn't have a Shabbos meal.
If you have 10 seats, you invite 8 people, and then when you come to the synagogue, you find 2 other people who don't have meals.
Awesome.
Yeah. Right.
People who don't have. People are a little less popular. People who are brand new to Judaism. People who just, you know, that's to make it a chesed, to incorporate people who, for whatever reason, don't have. Or they have food, but they're going to be alone.
Yeah.
That's the worst. You say, oh, I got tons of food. Yeah, don't worry. Come on over. We want to have you. You know, there's a time to be alone. But I'm just saying, but you feel that they're going to, you don't, they might struggle with loneliness.
Yeah.
It's a big, huge mitzvah. That's a Yeshayahu Shabbos meal. The opposite of Yeshayahu meal, how would the guy that Yeshayahu is talking to? Only my friends, my close friends, and my family. Period, the end, nobody else. All the other losers are pushed out, you know, they're not part of my club. You know, they don't got the membership. We continue. Why do we study chapter 58 Isaiah before we did the practical aspects of about Shabbos meals? Why did I start with this chapter 58 from Isaiah before we went to the halakha? Why did I do that?
Because isn't there a concept called Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah?
True. We'll explain that to everybody. We'll
get
it.
Okay.
Before you just drop that nugget there, Tal. Hold on.
You have a real Torah scholar.
Go ahead.
All it means is to be kind comes before being, to be kind is before the Torah.
Right, but he's actually saying that is the Torah. Tal is saying the phrase that pays it's mentioned in the Pirkei Avot. Derech Eretz Kadma Torah means literally Derech Eretz means the way of the land is before Torah. So it's been termed to be common decency to be what we call in Hebrew a mensch, Yiddish a mensch. Of course, a Jew should be at least a mensch before they have Torah. You know, as an add-on. So the way the Tal applied here is that Yeshayahu is saying you cannot be insensitive and indifferent to the plight of humanity as you're living yourself as being a committed Jew. But he's saying that this is part of being that guy is the person who wants to go beyond himself, have a relationship with Hashem, and wants to have a declare Shabbos a kavod and oneg day, a day of honor, showing honor to Hashem. He's going beyond himself. It's not about him and his agenda and what he wants to accomplish and what he can take and what he can grab and what can he accomplish. He's trying to go beyond that perspective. So therefore, by giving that broader perspective, it gives a directionality to what the halacha is trying to accomplish. For example, you can't call Shabbos a delight if a guy is just eating, you know, snacks, just like a tuna fish sandwich. Like, you know, okay, it's not, you're making like a regular weekday versus having, you know, thoughtful, special meals. Mm. You know, it's not about the quantity of food, it's the food is special. It's not about eating yourself into a food coma. Okay? All right, we're in the OT. That's just what I wanted to share tonight. And, all right, all the best.
This is fun.